Welcome to CPAC Today in Politics. Coming up, Vice Admiral Mark Norman says he will speak about what happened to him.
I have an important story to tell that Canadians will want and need to hear. It is my intention in the coming days to tell that story.
NDP leader Jagmeet Singh calls for an independent investigation into the handling of Norman's case.
What we've seen in this case is some deep concerns around a cozy relationship between the Liberal government and the Irving companies. We've heard concerns around Skye Bryson's implication and involvement. And we also heard some allegations of direct political interference of the Prime Minister's office in the handling of this case.
And General Motors announces an investment that will save 300 auto industry jobs.
Am I happy today? The answer is no. Am I happier today than I was in November of last year? The answer is yes. But am I deeply concerned about the families that are being negatively impacted? That's my preoccupation today, and it'll be my preoccupation tomorrow.
It's Thursday, May the 9th. I'm Mark Sutcliffe. Let's get right to the top political stories this morning. I'm joined by National Post columnist John Iveson. Good morning, John.
Morning, Mark.
There's new information this morning about the Mark Norman situation. Of course, yesterday, as expected, the Crown stayed the charge against the Vice Admiral, who has been through an ordeal of more than 2 years since his home was searched in January of 2017. You have a report this morning about the roots of this piece of information that arose that caused the Crown to change course. What do we know about that information that led to this outcome?
Well, we don't know for sure what it was that made the Crown change its mind, because the information is in the hands of the prosecutor and there's still an ongoing case, so they haven't divulged that. But Martin Norman's lawyer, Marie Heinen, hinted very heavily that it came from interviews that she did with Conservative-era ministers and people that the RCMP had not interviewed. Now, I spoke to Jason Kenney, the Premier of Alberta, who was Defence Minister at the time, and he said there was a Battle of the Atlantic dinner at the War Museum in Ottawa in April 2015, when he got talking to Mark Norman, who was then the Commander of the Royal Navy. He said at the time he was mulling the problem of how to supply the Navy with food, fuel and ammunition after the two serviceable supply ships had been decommissioned early. He said senior officials in the Department of National Defence, including apparently the then Chief of the Defence Staff, who was Tom Lawson. Jonathan Vance, the current Chief of the Defence Staff, was appointed in July of that year. But the Department of National Defence was recommending a 36-month process to upgrade the supply capacity, a time period that would allow other yards like Irving in Nova Scotia and C-SPAN in British Columbia to bid. But Kenny did not want to park the Navy for 3 years, and apparently neither did Norman. Norman recommended they go with a proposal from Davies Shipyard in Quebec to buy a commercial container ship and convert it. So Kenny said it was clear this proposal was the necessary, quickest way to get the equipment. Based on Norman's recommendation, he took this proposal to Cabinet. He gave it first fast-track to make the purchase, which turned out to be the right call because it came in time and on budget. And he then volunteered all this to Marie Heinen, and it seems that this information was crucial. And now we can only posit why that might be, but I think the case was made, well, how can he have been in breach of trust if he was doing what the government of the day wanted him to do? You know, in the military, you follow the last order you're given until it's countermanded. Now, it was never countermanded by the Liberal government. They never came out and said, we don't want this proposal, we want something else, at which point presumably any military person would say, right, that's the last order I've been given. So this is conjecture on my part, but I think that it may be the fact that it may be that Kenny's evidence helped Norman's case and led to the charge being dropped.
What happens now? Mark Norman goes back to work. He's back on active duty, which, of course, will be interesting. And beyond that, there's still the political side of this. Lots of questions remain. And I know the opposition's not going to let up about this, but will we ever learn what we were hoping to learn when this case was going to go to trial in August, right before the federal election?
I'm not sure we will. I mean, there's no parliamentary committee going to look at this. I think it's, you know, for a government that was meant to be open and transparent, there are lots of questions here that are probably going to go unanswered. how did we get to the stage where this prosecution was unfolded? I mean, it seems that the Liberals called in the cops to look at this, which I think was a very naive move. Governments rarely call for inquiries until they know what the answers are, and they call for a leak inquiry. Once that's in train, there's very little they can do to stop it. I think there was all sorts of institutional hurdles put in Mark Norman's way here. I mean, we know from testimony that there were people in the Department of National Defence who, when there were access to information requests put in to get certain information by the defence team, they deliberately obfuscated and delayed and hid information. They deliberately did not list information under Norman's name because they knew it would be found, so they put it under something else. I mean, the barriers this guy went through to clear his name are quite unbelievable. And you know, his lawyer says this, that essentially the government put their fingers on the scales of justice to weigh them down. I think if we may not find out everything that happened, but I think the voters are going to make their decision at the ballot box. Following the SNC case and then this case, the government's reputation for openness and transparency has just been exploded. And, you know, I think they owe Mark Norman an apology. And the only good thing is that justice has been done.
After a long time, obviously, and as he described it, a lot of pain for him and his family.
Right. Well, I mean, we know that there's going to be we suspect heavily there's going to be a compensation package for his pain and reputational damage.
Yeah. And the government's already said they will pay his legal bills. So
they said they'll pay his legal bills. Now they refused to pay them before.
Yeah.
So you know, let's not give them too much credit for saying they're going to do it now.
All right, let's turn to a couple of other stories. Interesting to see Green Party leader Elizabeth May saying that she expects answers soon from Jody Wilson-Raybould and Jane Philpott about whether or not they will join the Green Party and run for the Green Party in the next federal election. She's hoping to hear back from them by early June. Do you think there's a realistic prospect here for either of them?
Well, I guess they don't have too many options. I can't see either of them in the Conservative Party. I can't see why they would want to join the New Democratic Party. But would they win those seats as Green MPs? I'm not so sure. So I think they're probably both ambitious. Whether they've got realistic chances in those seats, I guess they will weigh the prospect, and if they think they could win, then maybe they'll go with it. But I don't think that either of them are going to do it.
Okay. Yesterday, we learned that General Motors has teamed up with Unifor, and they announced an investment in Oshawa, where General Motors was set to leave behind its plant there that had been operating for many years, and they're going to invest in that plant, and they're going to save 300 jobs there, which is it's not a big number compared to the number of people who used to work at that plant for General Motors, but it is going to be a better outcome than what was there before.
Right. Well, I think, you know, you just summed it up. I think it's testimony to the determination of Jerry Diaz, the union boss who's campaigned vigorously for Unifor to work with GM and get some kind of transitional, residual operation at the plant. I mean, it's not what it was, obviously. I think it's 300 of 2,600 union jobs at the plant, but clearly better than nothing, and I think nothing was what was on the table. So,
yeah.
So you know, credit to them, and it's going to be a part stamping and autonomous vehicle testing facility. I mean, who knows whether there's potential for growth there? You would think with autonomous vehicle testing, perhaps there is. So you know, fingers crossed. It's I think when that decision was made, there was a feeling that many of the auto plants in Canada could just suddenly relocate behind Donald Trump's tariff barriers. That was the original intent of those tariff barriers, after all. But, you know, I think this news and the news that Toyota is going to put new product into its plant in Cambridge, I think people are slightly more encouraged than they were in December of last year when GM made its announcement.
And finally, Andrew Scheer is saying that under a conservative government, Huawei would be banned from access to the 5G networks, a decision the federal government still hasn't made, and obviously plays into Canada's relationship with China, which Scheer was speaking about the other day. What do you think the consequences of taking that approach would be, given that we've got this ongoing battle with China over other issues, including the arrest of a Huawei executive?
Well, it is a big deal, you know. I mean, I think Xi's message on China is pretty no-nonsense, and that will resonate with a lot of people. And I think the temptation is, you know, we have to hit back. We're a G7 sovereign nation. We're, you know, they've blocked our canola and other things, and we should hit back. We can't trust Huawei. And I think that is the natural reaction but it is a knee-jerk reaction. You know, Australia has gone down the same road by banning Huawei, but Britain has not. And, you know, they're very cautious about saying we're going to allow Huawei parts in our 5G mobile networks. They will not be involved at the core, and we'll be monitoring it very closely. There is a danger in the knee-jerk reaction to try and freeze China out, because I think that, you know, the dangers of a trading system, international global trading system, racked by confrontations and ad hoc bans is a real potential problem to global growth and, you know, the prospect of another recession, if not even worse. You know, these things have got to be weighed very heavily. There has to be a decision made as to whether Huawei is indeed a threat or are we just using it as an excuse. And if it's not a real threat, then I think on balance, we should be allowing Huawei to be involved because the repercussions are likely to be out of proportion to what we do.
All right, John, great to have your comments on all these topics today. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Mark.
That's John Iveson of the National Post.
I have an important story to tell that Canadians will want and need to hear. It is my intention in the coming days to tell that story.
Now, here's what political columnists and commentators are writing about today. In an editorial, the Ottawa Citizen argues, something smells unusual in the Mark Norman case. The Citizen writes, there is doubt in the public mind about this case. As of now, we do not know what new documentation caused the Crown to stay the charge. That knowledge would help Canadians assess whether everyone, including the current government, acted honorably. For now, we are left with a respected military man who maintained his innocence from the start and who now appears vindicated. In the National Post, Christy Blatchford argues the state is a powerful foe, and it almost crushed Mark Norman. Blatchford writes, most days there were a half dozen, often more, lawyers from the Department of Justice behind Vice Admiral Mark Norman, a physical reminder that what he was up against was the state, with its massive reach and awesome power. Norman had a magnificent defense team, a public prosecution service that did its job, and a free press, which kept the case in the headlines. Absent any one of those elements, and the vice admiral might have had a different fate. In the Toronto Sun, Anthony Fury argues Mark Norman is owed an apology. Fury writes, Vice Admiral Norman's defense lawyer reminded the press that these charges were initially referred to the RCMP by the Privy Council Office. Why did they refer the case in the first place? Why did they hold back files? What was in them? These matters won't be addressed in the next few days. It is something that can be immediately resolved. Vice Admiral Norman is owed an apology, and it ought to come from the Prime Minister. Now, let's look at what's coming up on Canada's political agenda. The Prime Minister will take part in a Q&A at the Canadian Home Builders Association National Conference in Niagara Falls, Ontario. He will also take part in an armchair discussion at an open Liberal fundraising event in Toronto, followed by a community dinner in Milton, Ontario. Conservative members on the Standing Committee on Transportation, Infrastructure, and Communities will question Transport Minister Marc Garneau. Environment Minister Catherine McKenna will take part in an event focused on waste reduction at the National Arts Centre in Ottawa. Public Services Minister Carla Quattro will host a two-day conference in Ottawa called Building an Inclusive Canada, a National Disability Summit. Infrastructure Minister François-Philippe Champagne will take part in a teleconference updating progress on the Investing in Canada plan. International Trade Diversification Minister Jim Carr will speak in Vancouver about helping British Columbia businesses expand their markets and increase exports. And Health Minister Jeanette Patapaw-Taylor will take a tour of the new Healthy Aging Center in Fredericton and will later speak at the See Me art exhibit in Dieppe, New Brunswick. And that's CPAC Today in Politics for Thursday, May the 9th. Tune into Primetime Politics tonight on CPAC for coverage of all the day's events. Our podcast returns tomorrow morning. Have a great day.